BetOnline.ag is your number one source for all your basketball info, stats, news, and scores. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest player reports for this year's pro basketball playoffs. BetOnline is always your sports information headquarters this season, as we have you covered for all your sports wagering needs. Basketball, MLB, NHL hockey, right to UFC and boxing. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to get your betting info, including live betting options and your favorite casino and card games you can play right from your home. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Be sure to use our promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Welcome to Believe in Celtics, brought to you by Ben Online. I am Warren Shaw, and he's the great Gary Washburn, and we are your host and resource for everything Celtics this past season, this summer, and going into next season as well. Gary, hot off the NBA Finals, the Denver Nuggets take it home. Expected outcome, but how are you feeling, brother? I know it's got to be good to be home after all the traveling you've been doing.
Yeah, long season. Obviously, a lot of drama with the Celtics in terms of that seven-game series loss to the Miami Heat. And then jumping right into the finals and watching kind of Denver dismantle the Heat. But good full season. Obviously, there never seems to be an offseason now. Major trade. Celtics adding a couple assistant coaches. Now we're on the cusp of the draft where, you know, it's going to be a lot of fascinating probably moves on the draft night. And then obviously starting with Wembanyama going to the Spurs. I think we all know that's going to go down. But after that, we have no idea who's going second, third, fifth, you know. So a lot of good stuff. And then we're 3 weeks or less than 3 weeks from Summer League.
Yeah.
So a lot going on.
Yeah, you said a mouthful there too. And for our fans, listeners, you know, Gary will be out in Summer League. I'm going to even make an appearance out of Summer League. So maybe we'll send you a picture of us getting a drink or something like that as well, too. Yeah.
Be in the same place at the same time for the first time. That'd be great.
Yeah, man, it'll be a lot of fun. Well, as always, you know, we got to do our plugs. If you're following us, listen to us, please give the show a 5-star rating or whatever podcast outlet you're listening to us on. Or if you're on YouTube, hit that like, subscribe button, the whole nine. Make sure you follow Gary on Twitter at G Washburn Globe. You can follow me at Twitter at Shaw Sports NBA. And make sure you're following all of the Believe handles at Believe Network, at Believe Sports, et cetera, et cetera. So the way this show is going to go is kind of off-season edition. We'll kind of keep it, you know, quick and loose. The first aspect, Gary already touched on. The Celtics have added a couple assistant coaches. So we'll talk about that in the first half. In the second half of the show, we'll talk a little bit about the NBA draft from the Celtics standpoint perspective. A lot of obviously the trade chatter that's already happened, you know, Bradley Beal moving on to Phoenix here, and how close were Boston to even maybe even getting into that. And then obviously free agency targets as well too. Anything that, you know, my guy Gary has been hearing, you know, in the Twitterverse or on the cell phone lines, as they say. So we'll jump right in here. One of the major things when we last spoke, Gary, was we were, I think, a day before Brad Stevens' press conference. And at the time, the very next day, you know, Brad was pressed about, hey, why didn't you give Joe some assistance? Why didn't you, you know, make things go? And Brad, in typical fashion, he spun it in a way that was very positive. It was like, listen, we still were one game away, one quarter away from the NBA Finals. You know, we were second and third, respectively, in offensive and defensive rating. And all these things were true. You know, like, these are the facts. But I think when it came down to the playoff experience, we all saw that Joe probably needed some other assistance. And that wasn't to disparage any of the assistants that were on the team alongside Joe, but did he just need some help? So in that time, Brad has, hey, he's gone to work. You got to give the man credit. He's a man of his word. He said in that press conference, we will add probably somebody who was once a player to be on the sidelines along them and continue to add, you know, other additions along that. Since that time, Sam Cassell has been added. Charles Lee from the Milwaukee Bucks has been added. And as of today, as we're recording, Phil Pressey, another former Celtic and also a guy who turned coach, has now been added to the staff. Gary, what's your thoughts and impressions on these three additions, and not trying to rate them, so to speak, but just what can Celtic fans expect from three assistant coaches and how they'll support Joe Mazzulla coming into next season?
Yeah, Warren, I think it's a good positive thing. You know, we can criticize Mazzulla as much as we want. Obviously, he was open for criticism, deserved a level of criticism for the Celtics playoff performance and some of the stubborn moves that he made and kind of sticking to the three-point philosophy where, you know, obviously, as we saw in the finals, Denver didn't need the three-point shot to kind of take care of Miami. They did it with the twos and the ball movement. But I don't think that Joe had the greatest help. Remember, as you know, Warren, they lost Udoka, well chronicled, but and they also lost Will Hardy, you know, great first year assistant who jumped to the Utah Jazz, did a very good job with them, and obviously they probably would have made the playoffs if they had tried. I think they kind of tailed off at the end intentionally to try to get a better draft pick, and they weren't trying to be the eighth seed or play in or whatever, but. A very positive first season for Will Hardy. And in the middle of the season, they lost Damon Stoudemire. So if you're really thinking about it, like just three assistants, two NBA head coaches, and now a Division I head coach in the ACC, who's a former 15-year NBA veteran, 12-year NBA veteran, former All-Star, Rookie of the Year. So three guys with really great credentials. And you don't replace any of them. So I blame that on Brad. And he said during that press conference, Warren, that, we tried and we just couldn't pull it. Like, I don't know what that means, whether, you had one target and the guy just said no, whether he was asking for major money. I don't know what stopped them from at least filling one of those spots. But now I think they finally saw through and learned the hard way that you can't have a staff that's inexperienced, no NBA experience on the staff, very little. I think Aaron Miles was the only guy on the staff who played in the NBA. And I know he had a short stint with the Golden State Warriors and he was on the Warriors staff, but you didn't have any experience, frontline NBA experience. And also, Warren, you had a lot of EMA's guys on that staff. And as we've seen, a group of those guys are likely headed to Houston.
Yep.
Now, it's been announced, but those guys were on the way out the moment that Ime was hired by the Houston Rockets. So I just think it's astute of Brad to finally fill those positions. I think you're talking about Sam Cassell. I know Sam Cassell in terms of his resume, three-time NBA champion, a guy who's, known as a player's coach, a guy who's been kind of on Doc's staff for years in LA and now in Philadelphia last year, a couple years. A guy's probably looking to be an NBA head coach, right? Has not gotten the interviews and opportunities as much as I thought he would. I thought he'd have he's 53 years old, so he's of age. He's got the experience. He's been a longtime assistant. I'm not sure what's stopping this, but it's a good step for him. And I think to get out of Doc's shadow helps him too, to be kind of his own coach. And then Charles Lee, a guy who was assistant Budenholzer, Mike Budenholzer in Milwaukee, who was a finalist for the Toronto job. But another guy, a little younger, 38 years old, but another rising coach as a lead assistant. And I just think you got to line your staff with some veteran quality coaches. And that's exactly what the Celtics did. Phil Pressey, I think, is an interesting one. Obviously covered him as a player in his short stint, a couple years in Boston as a kind of a backup point guard. And I know he went overseas, had a couple other couple coffees with a couple of teams. So it'll be interesting to see how he takes. I'm sure he'll, he was an assistant at Missouri under Dennis Gates, who I know from his Cal days, a player at Cal. So Dennis Gates is obviously a credible, very good coach. And so I would assume that, Phil Pressey's a quality coach. And it will be interesting to see how, I'm sure he'll be like the guy who's recently removed from the NBA, can relate to some of those younger guys. Phil might be 32 now, something like that. So he'll be the guy that will be probably doing the most, like working with the guys and really kind of just building his resume up, in terms of trying to be an NBA coach. And remember, his father, Paul Pressey, was former NBA player and longtime NBA assistant coach. So he comes from a good pedigree of coaching with his father, Paul. So I think it's a positive move, Warren. I think they need to add another one. I think they need to add a big man coach. We'll see how that goes. You know, someone who can work with Rob, because I think Rob needs real development and on his offensive game. And I think they need someone who can kind of bond with Robert and just be like, you know, and it could be someone from last year's staff. They've had a couple of guys from last year's staff still coming back, kind of the back of the bench guys, in the, you know, second row guys, you call them. But I think, honestly, Warren, for it's a good start to the offseason for the Celtics. I think they acknowledge that they probably made a mistake by not adding to the staff, and they needed to. They needed to get quality known assistants. Like we you know, I like the EMA guys were good, the Ben Sullivans, Aaron Miles, a good young coach. Mike Moser is going to be a rising coach. Yeah. But you need guys that Jason and Jalen can look to and have the full respect for. They're going to know who Sam Cassell is. If they don't know him from his Rockets days, they definitely know him probably later in his career. They know him from his since outlawed gesture as a player. You know, he had a gesture that was once upon a time in the league acceptable. Maybe 15 years ago, it was an acceptable gesture after making a big play, and now it's it will get you fined.
First time I ever saw that was in the movie Major League. So, yeah. You know, kind of took it from there. But I don't, we all, if you know, you know.
Yeah, if it gets you, I'll get you fined. But that's been, you know, kind of, I remember Cassell was one of the first ones to do that in an NBA game. But I think it's a good start, Warren, for their offseason. We'll see about personnel and all that stuff. But you got to pad the coaching staff with experience. You got to give Joe some help. And then also hope Joe makes that leap from first year to second year,
yeah,
to where he can be more savvy and in situations and learn from some of the mistakes he made his first year.
So you had mentioned something, and you know, we won't belabor this too much, but you said Phil most likely probably picks as a guy that will do some of the day-to-day stuff with the guys. Charles comes in as basically the associate head coach, I believe. So basically essentially the number two. Sam comes in, you know, just kind of like, what do you think the role defined is going to ultimately be there too? Does Sam kind of like take over the defense? Does one of those guys take over the offense? Or is it really just, again, they're all just coaches and everybody just kind of plays whatever role is necessary?
I would assume Lee takes the defense and Cassell takes the offense and the guards. You know, it's an interesting thing because I thought that Cassell could be like the lead assistant, right? Like,
right.
He is a guy who has been looking for head coaching jobs, wanted to be a head coach, known around the league. As far as I know, Warren, good reputation. I haven't heard any negatives about Sam Cassell, just hasn't landed a job. And you know how political and sometimes subjective these things are.
For sure.
You know, Charles Lee hasn't gotten a job. He probably was in line for one. And then Toronto takes a kind of an, I don't know, an unknown assistant from the Memphis Grizzlies staff, you know, a guy that you wouldn't really know inside of, you know, NBA circle, unless you're deeply connected to NBA circles. Adrian Griffin, who would, you know, son is in the NBA, had waited for a long time for an NBA job, just got the Bucks job. You know, so, you know, you never know what year it's going to be your time. I mean, shoot, Ime Udoka interviewed for several jobs before he got the job with the Celtics. So it could happen in a year. So you would think that both Lee and Cassell want to use this as a springboard to get their own head coaching jobs. I think that's the incentive here.
Yeah.
Like, you know, listen, guys, like, we know you're probably not going to be here all that long, you know, 2-3 years, maybe a year, you know, but we're trying to win a championship. And I'm sure that was the pitch then. We're trying to win a championship. There's nothing like being on a championship staff where your assistants are going to, you know, be looked at differently. You helped a team win a chip. You know, look at Tom Thibodeau in terms of with the Celtics, became a head coach shortly after helping the Celtics in 08. So you can look at it like that. I'm not really, I'm assuming just from the surface that Cassell will work with the guards, Lee will organize the defense, And I think they'll all come together and try to restructure the offense, because I just think, as we saw, Warren, the Celtics were far too reliant on a three-point shot. We talked about that in our podcast all year, falling in love with a three. When they're going down, you look like a champion. When you don't, you look like an average ball club. And as we saw in the last two games of the Miami series, 16 for 77 on a three-point shot. They won game six. And people, they're lucky because of Derek White. Yeah, Derek White made a great play. But they also scored 104 points, most of those on twos. They actually attacked the rim in that game. But the game seven, they were just firing away, thinking. Then they fell behind and fired away even more. And it was just a terrible display. You know, it was just a bad night for the Celtics. So I think, and then on the flip side, as we know, Denver shoots 33% from the three-point line. Just was very below average on the three. They had timely threes, but didn't hit a lot of them. One of those wins, they had nine. And another win, they had eight. Another win, they had five. I think one game, they were 5 for 28. And they still won by 12, 13 points. So I think the recipe to beating the Heat and beating the quality teams is not necessarily bombarding them with threes. And I think the Celtics have to change the structure of their offense.
Very well said, my guy. I think, as the Boston Celtics have, and Brad Stevens specifically, has made good on his word. You know, they gave Joe Mazzulla some assistance, and he's done exactly that with three hires here now. And I think Gary makes a great point. Maybe one more to definitely help out the big men. And also, I love what you said, because about Cassell and Lee specifically, Lee being a Coach Bud guy, and then, Cassell being a Doc Rivers guy. If they're able to come over here and get Boston over this massive hump that they haven't been able to get over, especially with Tatum and Brown in that era, that does allow them the path. Everybody loves winning. And so, when you're a winner, that's when the opportunities definitely come about. So them getting from under those very esteemed head coaches, Doc and Bud, who also have NBA championships, but they have yet and will not, it doesn't seem like they'll land a job this summer. So for them now, they get to, come to a team that's pretty well established. I'm sure some Bucks fans are probably like, how dare you? How can you go over there? Even some Sixers fans, how can you go over there? But it is what it is now. The Celtics are in place now and Joe Mazzulla is in place, and he has to do the internal improvement to get better, to see where they can land next season. And hopefully coaching will not be as much of a conversation going into the season. Let's take a quick break here. And on the other side of this here, we'll go ahead and talk about, as we alluded to, the NBA draft from the Celtics standpoint, talk a little bit about some of the trades already happening, and how close is Boston in to get into some of these other conversations, some names out there in free agency primer as well. It's here on Believe in Celtics, brought to you on Bet Online, next time on the Geno segment here on the other side of this break. And on this week's edition of Geno Time here on Believe in Celtics, brought to you by Bet Online, Gary and I are going to kind of go through the upcoming offseason. And first up is the NBA draft. So Boston has a second round pick, 35 overall. What are you hearing, G, in terms of Boston's interest in that pick? Are we looking at a draft and stash situation? Second round, obviously not guaranteed money in any capacity. What's your thought process here? Is Boston looking to move up in any capacity, move out? What are you hearing about the NBA draft from Boston's standpoint?
Well, Warren, I think this is not going to be a draft and stash. I think this is going to be the best player available, and they could get a pretty good player. I've seen mock drafts. I mean, we could all do mock drafts and then,
go in the face.
Yeah, and we could go to FanDuel and try to bet if we're going to get number 35, and we will probably win. We would not succeed at getting who would actually be the 35th pick, so you have to go with a group of guys, right? Because there's going to be a guy who's projected at 35 who probably gets taken at 27, right? There's just a bunch of guys. The guys I've seen, the one guy I was intrigued with was Marcus Sasser from Houston, the shooting guard. Who has played on the team that made the Final Four, has been there for a few years now. I think he could have come back for another year, but he decided to enter the draft. If the Celtics were to get someone like a Marcus Sasser, who a veteran guy, a guy who's played in big games, coached Duke College by Kelvin Sampson, a real high quality coach. I think they would be thrilled. And I think, remember, the two-way contract, JD Davidson's going to come back now. Is JD Davidson going to want a regular NBA deal? The last year's second-round pick from Alabama, they could bring him back on another two-way contract. The other kid from Florida State, Mufondo Camigeli, is out of options in terms of two-ways. He's already been on enough two-ways. He does not eligible for a two-way contract. So they're going to have a two-way slot. So you could draft the best possible player on the board at that particular time, fill your two-way slot with him, and then bring Davidson in. So at least you have two young prospects on your bench that are learning. And I don't know what they like. I think it'll be interesting. And for Celtic fans that are like, well, it's summer league and we don't have a first round pick. And hey, JD Davidson is going to be playing in summer league. His development is going to be interesting to watch. We'll see who else they sign, some undrafted free agents who, you know, but I think looking at Davidson and then whoever the second round pick is going to be, will be intriguing to see like how those guys develop. Because if you look at a guy like Marcus Sasser was a projected first-round pick maybe last draft. He decided to come back. It might be a better move for him because he's more mature and, like, you know, financially it might not be a better move for him. But long-term, the health of your career, it might be a better move for him that he stayed an extra year at Houston. And he was hurt, I know, most of the NCAA tournament. They lost to Miami, I want to say, during that, their tournament run, your local Canes, when they made that tournament run to the Final Four. But I think they would be thrilled to get someone like him. They would be thrilled to get one of these veteran college guys who, you know, is ready to help and ready to comes from a good system. I think they would be thrilled with that because they need youth. If you look at the bench, they didn't have a lot of young guys in terms of, like, prospects. They had Cabangeli and they had Davidson. Neither of them were eligible for the playoffs because they were on two-way contracts. Davidson's a guy I'm intrigued with. Could they fill Davidson with Peyton Pritchard's role because they kind of feel like Pritchard might be moving on? Who knows? But Davidson's a guy to watch. And let's see, you know, they've been working on him with his three-point shot. He's a lightning fast kid.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's an exciting time. Not, you know, they don't have a lottery pick. And of course, Celtic fans all, you know, hey, we want a top 10 pick. We get it. Okay. But good teams don't get top 10 picks. And Brad has traded all the damn first round picks over the last few years. So they're able to trade up to get that 35th pick because I think their pick would have been 29. So I think Milwaukee has 30. I think Indiana has the Celtics pick at 29, but not a big difference between 29 and 35. So if they pick right, you can get a quality guy who might be able to, if not help next year, maybe help the end of next year. Maybe a guy who can, you know, be a contributor down the road, you know, and as we know, I mean, we just learned the 41st pick, overall pick in 2014 is the best player in the world,
yep.
Right? Giannis went 13th. Giannis, I mean, 12 teams, Warren, passed on Giannis and the Kupo, including the Celtics.
Including Boston.
Yep. Including Boston. Okay, so the draft is an inexact science, okay? We all know that just because you're not a top 10 pick doesn't mean you're trash. You can still help. And with the depth of these drafts now, you got a lot of the veteran college guys coming in. And then you also have the one and done. You got these G League elites, the overtime, G League Ignites, overtime elites. You got all these, you know, international guys. You have a plethora of talent. So it's sometimes hard to find that talent because you could think of a guy overseas who might help. He doesn't, you know. I mean, just look at remember back with the Marcus Smart draft, and everybody was the guy that everybody was intrigued with was Dante Exum. Remember that guy? Oh my God, he's gonna be, you know, he's the mystery guy, you know, the Australian kid. And Dante Exum is now playing overseas, never really made it. It was kind of a bust. The Celtics missed out on him because he was taken before. They took Marcus Smart sixth. Also in that draft, Aaron Gordon, you know, who was taken fourth in that draft. The Celtics looking deeply at him, and you know, and they end up getting Marcus Smart, who's been with the team 9 years now, and helped him to a lot of victories. So, you know, you don't know what you're going to get, especially at 35. But I think the Celtics definitely are not going to take some guy we've never heard of and keep him in Europe for 3 years. They've got enough of those guys. They got the kid from France. They got the kid from Israel who are still playing over there overseas. They're going to get a kid that's going to try to have a good chance to make the team.
All right. So no intel in terms of them trying to move up as of right now, kind of just staying where they're at, see what's best player available, and then kind of keeping pushing from there. Gotcha.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, not to be like, could they move up to the first round? What would they give for that? Is there somebody – I haven't heard of someone that they absolutely feel like they have to have.
Well, there's a money issue in that too, right? Yes. So I think, you know, with them trying to do the Jalen extension coming up as well too, then you going to the first round, guaranteed money, you know, unless you're moving that pick after you acquire it. Like I said, there's just probably – not the most. So that second round with not having to guarantee the money, as you alluded
exactly.
to.
Right?
Probably exactly. Makes
it. I think the 35th pick for their philosophy and there is probably the best position they can be in at this point, because you're talking about a guy, whoever it is, a guy who could have been drafted in the first round, who probably just didn't make the cut.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, right now ESPN has them taking Gregory Jackson, sophomore from South Carolina, power forward. Like, you know, there's a bunch of guys, Trace Jackson Davis, a guy we've seen a lot at Indiana, Andre Jackson, the kid from Connecticut, Sasser, as I talked about, Bryce Sensabaugh from Ohio State. There's guys on here that, you know, Julian Phillips from Tennessee. There's guys who are quality players who just got kind of edged out of the first round because – it's such a subjective thing at this point. So I think if you're the Celtics, this is the perfect situation, a high second rounder, a guy who should make your team unless you completely miss on him, and a guy who can probably help you down the road, if not this season. You know, the worst case scenario, Warren, is a two-way contract. You know, he gets his polish in Maine and then is ready to help you for the 24-25 season, just like I think now JD Davidson probably enters camp. And we'll see a good, as I mentioned before, we'll get a good look at him in Vegas.
Yep.
You know, is Davidson ready to fight for like a legitimate NBA contract and a roster spot?
So let's transition from the draft. And obviously the next biggest part of the conversation will be free agency right after that. Reports are out there that Stevens has, and the Boston Celtics have been active, and are kicking around a bunch of different scenarios. You already alluded to Peyton Pritchard and, you know, his disdain and not necessarily wanting to come back, not necessarily having the role that he ultimately wants. Obviously with the Grant Williams situation, Williams had surgery, you know, we should be ready for the part of the regular season. Don't think that will deter too many teams. Brogdon's name has come up a lot in trade conversations. Smart, obviously. Big trade that happened in the NBA, obviously, was Bradley Beal moving on to Phoenix, you know, for Chris Paul and you know, some parts. Landry Shamet, too, sorry. But more or less, they get that done. There was conversation that maybe Boston might have been interested, you know, do the whole Tatum Beal situation. I don't really think that was really valid, but what are your thoughts and kind of, you know, where Boston is at? What are you hearing in terms of the trade market as we go into free agency and even the draft as well too? You know, do you think Boston is anxious and eager to make a move with some of the names that I just mentioned?
Yeah, Warren, I think that they're going to clear out some space in the backcourt. I think they realize that their front court has suffered, and the back court could probably use some retooling itself. I think that you got to figure out what to do. Like, and everyone's talking about Brogdon and, you know, this is a tough one because I think Brogdon had a fine year. He won Sixth Man of the Year. He came off the bench. But I also think, too, remember, when they acquired Malcolm Brogdon, it was supposed to be a stabilizing point guard who could distribute, could make their fourth quarter offense more efficient. It was like, well, who's going to play? Like, is he going to replace Marcus? What's Marcus going to think about that? It ended up that they told Malcolm right away, you're not starting. And they turned him into kind of a Vinnie Johnson microwave, Lou Williams kind of guy. Like, okay, Malcolm, go in there and score. And he did. But there wasn't a lot of other things that went on. It wasn't like he was stabilizing the offense. It wasn't like he was distributing the ball. It wasn't like he was like, and nothing against Malcolm, but I just think they put him in kind of a Jamal Crawford type of role where he was just supposed to come in there and light up, you know, lift the second unit offensively. And there wasn't much point guard that was going on there.
Yeah, they pigeonholed him for sure. I think we were very, I think, surprised in some ways, but by midseason you kind of saw what it was. But
exactly.
Right, he didn't get exactly what Boston needed in terms of that play creation on a regular basis.
Yeah, especially down the stretch in the fourth quarter, right? Yeah. Especially because Marcus did not have a great year all around, not defensively, not shooting-wise, not distributing. You know, in the playoffs, he had his moments, but also, some of the Harlem Globetrotters passes and some of the things he was trying to do and some of the ill-advised three-pointers. And Marcus was Marcus, right? And so I think they're going to try to figure out how can we become a more efficient offense, especially off the pick and roll. I've written that they should go after Chris Paul. And that means, you know, I don't think you can have Malcolm, Marcus, and Chris Paul.
And Derek White.
You know, that'd be crowded. But I think they need someone. And I think they finally realized that, okay, like, we're good enough to get to the finals. They could have gone to the finals, right? We're good enough to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. We're one of the top 3 to 4 teams in the league. What puts us over the top? Offensive efficiency down the stretch. The defense needs to improve, as we saw, Warren. Like, the defense was not good throughout the year, not as efficient as it was in the Ime year. And as much as the numbers that Joe wants to bring up or whatever, the defense suffered at times. But I also think they need to have someone run the offense, especially down the stretch. And Chris
Let me ask you this, though, from the Chris Paul standpoint, now that he's in Washington and that deal, as we're recording, being held up. So as they try to shop him for a third team to get him presumably to a destination that he ultimately may want to go, obviously the Clippers and Lakers are at the top of that list right now. What would be Boston's path to Chris Paul now as he sits in Washington without first round picks to even offer Washington?
Yeah, that would have to be the Wizards decide to waive him, in my opinion. And okay. Then and obviously he's going to have his share of suitors. He's going to have both LA teams. He's going to have all of his old buddies, the banana boat crew with LeBron and guys that think he can put them over the top because they need a floor general. And I think the Celtics should be in that line. Like, they have, I think what could entice Paul is the chance to win a championship. The only thing missing from his resume is a title. And as we know, Warren, retiring without a title, retiring ringless is a tough thing to do, and you get ridiculed. We just saw Carmelo Anthony retire from the game after 18, 19 years, no chip, and his legacy is somewhat tainted, right? Well, he was selfish in New York. Well, he asked out of Denver. Well, he was like all that. All he had to do was win one chip, right? And it would have completely changed his whole narrative. And right. I think Chris Paul feels the same way. You know, if Chris Paul, the point guard, one of the best point guards of all time, all that. But when it comes to the rankings and you put him up against Isaiah Thomas and Stockton and all that, well, you didn't win a championship, Chris, so you can't be maybe Stockton, but you can't be on Isaiah's level. You can't be on, you're definitely tier two. you're down there with Nash and Stockton, which is great company, but I think that Chris has to be encouraged and enticed by winning a championship. Mm-hmm. And his best opportunity probably be in Boston.
Yeah, I agree with you, Gary. Honestly, I know, and no homerism here at all. I think obviously the injury history with the Clippers just makes that very tenable at best, you know, yeah. in that situation. And then obviously even with LeBron and AD, just, you know, LeBron, as old as Chris Paul is, to some degree, it's just there's always that risk in there too. So I think if you get with two young guns who are really, really ready and primed to do that, I think you're right. Of those teams that you mentioned, and obviously he could look at Milwaukee, I guess, as well too. But I think those are the paths there. I don't see him going to Miami and making that. But it's interesting that you're alluding to now because of the path that Washington has entered the chat, so to speak, and now can kind of control the destination. Boston's path there probably comes a little bit harder because the assets aren't going to be there. And I just don't know that Washington is going to be willing to just waive them if they feel like they can, because they kind of got screwed on the Beal deal. Right. So now this is, second chance, but this is their best chance to get any type of assets back now. And Chris Paul.
That has to be one of the worst trades in my goodness, man. You don't even get a starter in back for, I mean, if you consider Landry Shamet a starter on your team, you're not a very good, nothing against Landry Shamet, but
sure,
a guy who comes off the bench and lights it up from three. He's not an NBA starter on a good team. So you didn't even get a starting caliber player back. Chris Paul in Washington, like who's he going to lead? You know, hey, Corey Kispert, hey, Dingy Avita, you know, like it's, you know, because Kuzma is opting out and it's going to go for the bag.
Yeah.
Porzingis has a player option at $36 million that I would assume he'll pick up. And so it'll be Chris Paul and Porzingis. So if you're the Wizards, yeah, you try to maximize. You can use Paul for cap relief because the next year is not guaranteed. You save $15 million because if you release him by the 28th, you only paid him $15 million of his $30 million. So you're saving a couple of bucks, and also his salary slot is on your books, you know, for the year, so it comes off the cap. And you can maybe be free agents and players in free agency next summer. It all depends on what Washington, like with new president, new general manager, yeah. all new leadership in Washington. And we know the worst position to be in, Warren, is like on the cusp of the playoffs, but not quite. Like Washington for years has had that 11th pick, the 12th pick, the 10th. They've never been bad enough to go for a real superstar. The last guy they got was Beal, right? Yeah. Like the last guy who was, you know, or Otto Porter, which that didn't work out, you know. But those years when they had the first pick and they took John Wall and they took Beal and they took Otto Porter, it didn't work out. So now they've taken over the last few years, Dingy Avita, Johnny Davis, who didn't have a good rookie year, Corey Kispert, Rui Hachimura, who has since been traded. Like, they have to go bottom. So if you're Washington, are they looking for a first-round pick? Are they looking for draft assets? What are they looking for Chris Paul? You know, is a team willing to trade them a good young player for him? Just for, like, it gets complicated. So I think the Celtics are going to have to wait this one out, figure out. But the good thing is his fate will be decided likely by the 28th before free agency begins. So if he's a free agent, then they can start talking to him. But I think they've got to make a change, Warren, in the backcourt. Like they can't, like, you know, and I'm not ripping Marcus. I think Marcus has done a lot of great things for the Celtics. But is he a true point guard? Is he that floor general that you need? And with Jason and Jalen going, entering the prime of their careers, they need somebody who makes it easier on them. And as I've written, like the Celtics have nobody to hit a mid-range jumper. They just don't. Marcus, I looked up, took 24 mid-range jumpers during the regular season. Malcolm took 82. So last 2 years ago, because I'm, I'll, I, I did for Chris Paul 2 years ago, the 21-22 season. Chris Paul took 297. So, and that's his shot. It's automatic. He can hit those in his sleep. You know, it's a threat offensively. When you have someone coming off the pick and roll, you don't have to just send to it Jason and go, okay, Marcus, go do something. Like, no, I'm going to hit this J. That's what I'm going to do. Like, you need someone to do that. So if I'm the Celtics, I retool the backcourt. Does that mean trade Malcolm for a big? Because I think they need another quality big in the you know. I think Brad is just, you know, the Luke Cornett attachment, I don't get. The Mike Muscala trade was obviously a mistake. It was a bust. You know, you got to get guys in your team that can play. And I like Blake Griffin. I think he did wonders for the locker room. But for whatever reason, Joe felt like he couldn't play in the playoffs.
Right.
Right. Like I thought Blake did some good things on the court during the regular season. There's a game he played like 35 minutes. You remember that? But for whatever reason, Joe was like, nah, I can't use this guy. So when you got your bench lined up with Blake Griffin, Joe doesn't feel like he uses him, can use him. Peyton Pritchard, Joe doesn't just like him. Mike Muscala, Joe doesn't feel like he can play him. Sam Hauser didn't understand why he didn't play more in the playoffs. You know, I know they went at him defensively, but I thought the three-point threat was there. And then Grant in and out of the doghouse. I just felt like they, you know, Brad wasted a lot of roster spots, and you got to fill your team with talent. One thing that I look at Denver, they had, you know, like Bruce Brown, Christian Brown, Ish Smith didn't play, but still a dude who knows how to run an offense.
Yeah.
You know, DeAndre Jordan, past his prime, but can still rim protect. And, you know, he's not terrible out there, although obviously, I mean, he's not, you know, dunking on dudes from the pick and roll anymore. You know, like Jeff Green, like they lined their team with veteran talent, and not everybody's going to play. But everybody could play.
Right. Yeah, threat is there.
And literally, DeAndre Jordan played in game 5. He played in the clincher because they had foul trouble with
Jokic. He got a block. He wasn't even a negative in the plus minus. He held his own.
Jokic got into foul trouble. Aaron Gordon got into foul trouble. They needed a big. They threw DeAndre out there for like 7 or 8 minutes or whatever. You know, like you gotta trust your guys. And I think that for whatever reason, Joe didn't trust the guys, and I don't know if Brad lined the roster up with guys who could play.
And so let's play, you know, not necessarily play, but like kind of run through a list of names, and you can just say kind of no chance, or maybe there's a path if there's some interest, if you will, too. So we'll start with some bigs, and, you know, some of these are going to be very facetious, but I'm going to go through the list, you know, for argument's sake. All right. So if we're starting with the bigs, all right, the first name that I see that is maybe even somewhat viable, maybe Christian Wood. What do you say? Yay or nay?
I think that they would love to a guy like Christian. He's athletic. He's versatile. You know, now the whole thing with that, Warren, is, well, how does that affect Robert Williams? Because I just think they have to figure out a plan. Like, I think the whole thing, the genesis of this, Warren, is how they truly feel about Robert Williams. Like, is he a 50-game-a-year guy who's going to have his spurts in the playoffs, but not, you can't run him out there for 35 minutes and he's not going to be effective? Like, this was not a good postseason for Robert Williams. And remember, they really put him in bubble wrap after he came back from the knee injury. They put him in bubble wrap. They made sure that he was completely healthy for the playoffs because the Robert Williams effect was there. And I think Robert had his moments, especially in the Philadelphia series, but in the Miami series, I didn't think he was effective at all. And they have to figure out, he's 5 years in now, right? Like, you know, time flies and Rob's 5 years in. What do we view Robert as? They have to have some hard conversations Is he a starting center in this league? Is he a backup center? Is he a guy you can throw? Like, what? How do they view Robert Williams? Can he play more minutes? Are you going to limit him to 28 to 30 because of his health history? Can he play more than 55 games? Or are you just going to rest him because of just his health history? So I think that – I think Christian Wood's an option, but that's a – you know, he's not going to – you know, not Christian's sure. – he's going to ask for the bag because Christian's a younger player entering his prime. He's found himself after bouncing around for a long time. But I think it all depends on how they feel about Robert.
All right. Well, staying in that same mind, so we got that. You know, we'll keep the Robert conversation at the front of our minds. Your opinion here, I'm going to group these three guys here. Dwight Powell. All right, Mason Plumlee, Naz Reid.
Naz Reid's the guy I think that they would love to have, right?
Oh, man, you and I, okay.
Everybody loves Naz Reid. Naz has a contingent of fans in Boston because he can shoot the three. He's a dog because this team needs dogs, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not – and for our podcast listeners and viewers, dogs is a good thing, okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Naz Reid would be a guy, but, you know, do you give him the mid-level? Will he take it? Because I think he's probably one of those guys in the Grant category where he's looking for 11 or 12 a year. He's looking for a payday. He's looking for a big step forward financially. But I think that's a guy that they could really use because he could stretch the floor. He could run the floor. He's athletic. I think the Celtics would love to have that guy. If you look at a Plumlee, very limited, but can play defense, who can give you good rebounding, get dirty work in the paint. Dwight Powell, I think there's a reason why Dallas has been seeking a big and Dwight Powell's been there the whole time, right? there's something about Dwight that he'll win the contest getting off the bus. You see that dude in person, he's a monster, right? Physically a monster, looks like he'll just, you know, go Shaq on you, but just doesn't have the skills set to really put him, on that next level. I don't think they would be interested in Dwight Powell.
All right, last one from the big side, Thomas Bryant. Obviously, Celtics had interest last year, just coming off an NBA championship. You know, what are your thoughts on Thomas Bryant?
I like Thomas Bryant. Thomas Bryant turned down himself and signed with the Lakers, wasn't playing, then signed with the Nuggets and won a chip. And he's another guy on the bench who did not play for the Nuggets in the playoffs. Didn't get much run at all, but now he's got a ring, and now he'll probably want to go someplace more where he can play. I think that's an intriguing one because he's young, he's athletic, he's coming off an ACL, but he's a guy who works, hustles. You can see the work ethic and the hustle. You know, he's enthusiastic. So, and I think Thomas wants to, I think now it's like, okay, I got a chip and I didn't really play. Okay, now I want to go somewhere and win a chip and play. I want to contribute. So I think playing time would be very important to him. And I think as a third big, because, and we can talk about this, Warren, it all depends on, you know, remember, they signed Al Horford to another 2 years.
Yep.
Okay. So he's going to be back. And I think Al did show signs of age. And as much as the Celtics tried to preserve him, not play him in back-to-backs, give him as much rest as possible, I think he wore down during the playoffs. I think offensively he was limited. I think he shot 29% from the three in the playoffs, which really hurt the Celtics, really hurt the team because he wasn't scoring twos anymore. He's not scoring at the rim anymore. Warren, I mean, you remember
looking at him anymore?
No, he doesn't even. Yeah, it's not even a possibility. Like he's not even. He gets the ball and just looks for the pass. You know, even though he was 6 feet from the basket, that Miami zone, very frustrating if you're a Celtic fan. But you got to figure, okay, what do they do with Al? Okay, because Al started out, remember, like a shot of lightning last year. Looked like 30-year-old Al, 28-year-old Al.
Locking shots.
Yeah, I mean, he was just that first 30 or 40 games, and all of a sudden he started slowing down. And by the playoffs, the shot wasn't going down, which means he wasn't scoring. He was having gains of two points. He doesn't get to the line anymore. So you have to figure out what you want to do with Al Horford. Do Do you want to reduce his workload and his playing time? Do you want to, you know, have him come in certain situations? Do you just say, oh, well, that was an exception. Al can still play at a high level. Like, where do you want at? Where do you want to do? Because you don't have to worry about him being in shape. You know, you don't have to worry about his conditioning. You just have to worry about fatigue, and you have to worry about age, yeah, right? You know, because obviously we know centers, you know, like your Kevin Willis's and Robert Parrish's, and some of these guys can play till 40, right? It's now they're not necessarily effective at 40, but they can play until 40. But they're 40. Out there. Yeah. But they're out there. They can do spot work. So I think you have to really, is this like the hard conversation with Robert Williams, the hard conversation about Al Horford? Where do we want Al? Where do we see Al next year? Do we see him as a third big? Do we see him as his playing time being drastically reduced? What do we see? And I think that's how you have to judge. To me, you need, to me, a dude who can eat minutes, bring in a guy who can eat minutes, who can score at the rim, who can give you a little bit of everything. And you want to have a three-headed monster at center? I think that's a good idea. Leave your egos at the door. You know, I know Robert wants to play as much as he can, but I think we all know, and I think Robert knows, he just doesn't have that type of body.
Right.
You know, he just, and I don't know what to do with Robert in terms of, like, do you send him to that Duke University Center, and not being funny, and have his everything examined, his bone structure and or whatever, and say, and the doctor say, you know what, he just doesn't have the bone density or his knee, whatever the structure is, you know, they can tell you this is his ceiling in terms of this is how much you should play him. This is what is likely to happen. His career is not going to probably last another 6-7 years. I remember I covered, another Cal guy, my alma mater, Leon Poe, tore his ACL twice, one in high school, one in college. He said doctors told him, like, you'll play. He came out as a sophomore because the doctors told him, you got about 6 or 7 years in your knees. Mm. And I think he played 7 years, 6 or 7 years. It's like Brandon Roy, you know, one of a fantastic player with Portland, you know, came in with some knee concerns. I didn't even know that till I found out, like, I did not know his knee was an issue. Because I was in Seattle when he was at University of Washington, and he was a superstar. But hey, you got about 6 years on these legs, so maybe Robert does have one of those, like, you're not gonna play till you're 35, and not everybody does. We've known plenty of players, even recently, that just their bodies did not allow them to play into the mid to late 30s. So I think you have to assess Robert and Al, what to do with them, and then bring in that complimentary third big, like a Thomas Bryant. I think that's a perfect addition. Naz Reid might be a little expensive, but Thomas Bryant, a guy who's coming in with mad energy, coming off a championship, hungry for minutes, hungry for some respect, and who can help you with the energy. He can shoot from the three. He'll hustle his ass off. Yeah, mm-hmm. He can rebound. He can block shots. He's like another Robert out there, and you don't need to play him 40 minutes. I think that would be a perfect addition, because you got to move on from the Cornette, and you got to get some real guys in here.
Yeah, good point. So we'll move off of the bigs here and kind of close out the show with, you know, a couple of potential Peyton Pritchard replacements, if you will, too. So you already mentioned that, you know, Davidson might have a chance to kind of slot into that role. But from the free agent side, I'll throw three names out at you. And these are not as sexy as we were talking about, you know, with the bigs. But I think when you talk about potential play creation, or at least penetration, and people who do something different from what Boston currently has, I'll give you three names. All right, you ready?
Ready.
John Wall, Derrick Rose, Dennis Smith Jr. Any of those excite you for, you know, as a, ooh, God, he's scratching his head, y'all. Yeah. we heard his head. Do any of those excite you in any capacity for Boston as a third point guard?
You know, it's not that, like, okay, Wall's a guy, like, I just think when you're talking about Rose is a guy I think that could come off the bench and give them a lift. He could take that Malcolm role. Okay. I don't know how much of a point guard Derrick Rose is anymore. I think he's a more of a scoring guard. I think he could give you a lift and give you buckets because Derrick still know how to score. Okay. He still works hard. They just pushed him out of New York. John Wall, I think, feels like he's still 25. He's still like he's washed, you know, he's Washington John Wall. And I think we've seen in LA that he wasn't.
Yeah.
And so how does if he's not playing as much, how does he affect the locker room? I think he has a real chance to be flammable. Dennis Smith Jr. is a guy who could help you here and there. I'm not, you know, it was unfortunate. I mean, the guy had a great rookie year with the Mavericks, and suddenly Rick Carlisle just like flipped on him and turned like was just like, you're not the guy. And then they drafted Luka, and that was the end of that. And now he's just a journeyman. It's just amazing, unfortunately, how quickly, because I don't know if you remember, it wasn't that long ago, but that his rookie year was a really, really, he had a really good rookie year. Then all of a sudden Luka became available. So I think Derrick Rose would be somebody I think they could look at as a veteran. I mean, you're talking about a guy who could command the respect of the locker room, a guy that they appreciate, and then give him a role of that Malcolm Jr., like a Malcolm Brogdon, not six-man role, but
Malcolm Brogdon,
light role, where he can come in and get your buckets, give your offense a lift, and he can run the offense too. But I would prefer, well, those three, if I had to, I'd bring in D. Rose. I think he still has something left. And as I said, he can definitely still score the basketball.
All right, last one here, and we'll wrap it up here, and then we'll obviously reconvene after the draft and, you know, as free agency starts here, Gary. But, you know, a guy maybe I haven't mentioned, you know, that's somewhat realistic for Boston for all the various needs that you may think they have. Is there anybody that you think that they should at least be sniffing around to see, hey, July 1, hey, would you want to come, you know, don the green?
I mean, Paul's the only guy I can think of. Naz Reid. I have not examined like the full list of like whatever, how many hundred free agents.
It's extensive. So
yeah, 100 free agents out there. And we haven't talked about it. The one guy that will be back that wasn't there last year is Danilo Gallinari.
Yep.
And I think it's like signing a free agent right now. Who knows how long it will take him to get his knees back and get his sea legs back after missing a whole year with the knee injury and what he'll bring. But I do think that's like signing a free agent, right?
I think in some ways, doesn't that make Grant a little bit more expendable, you know, to some degree? I mean, you're taking a risk, though, you know, because Gallo does have an injury history. But yeah. I think that probably spells bad news for Grant Williams because Gallo is coming back for
I don't know how, and I think it may be for Hauser, but I also think that Gallo could play the five in the sense, stretch the floor if they want to get more versatile. So I do think that that's a possibility. I do think that I think they like Grant. I think that there's a strange kind of attraction, and I'll say this, between Grant and himself. Like, there's this, well, he's out of here but I think he would love to come back. I think his teammates like him. I think that he needs to have some long conversations with Joe Mazzulla about his role. And I think he needs to play consistently. This whole, like, playing with his head and the mind games that went on this year, I don't think were good for him. I don't understand what he did. You know, does he talk too much? Whatever. That should not cost you playing time. Those two missed free throws in Cleveland. I don't know what it was, and I don't think anyone – and I'm sure inside the locker room it was maybe something, but I don't know why – Mazzulla just decided you're not capable of playing in the games. I don't think that was a good for this team. So, I think that devalued him on the market. Now, obviously, Warren, there'll be teams like San Antonio and Indiana, teams with cap space that will be able to make plays for Grant Williams. We'll see if the Celtics would match any offers. Obviously, he's a restricted free agent for our fans. He's not unrestricted, so he anything that he gets, the Celtics can match if they choose to. so he can be back in green, regardless of if he explores and meets with teams and has these, you know, dinners on the, you know, waterfront with all these other teams with the owner and all that. He can still be a Boston Celtic if they choose. So I think I'm trying to think of someone that I think they should target. Like Chris Paul's a guy I think that has got to be seriously considered, a guy who can command the locker room and who can get – you need somebody to help Jason and Jalen, make it easier for them, and also tell them, hey, fool, you get your ass over here. You get – Jalen, you get over here. And I ain't trying to hear nothing. They ain't going to say nothing to Chris because he knows the game. You know, I think he should be their number one option.
Well, Gary, I think that's a great place to wrap it up here. You know, if you've been tuning in here to Believe in Celtics, you know, G. Washburn, he gives it to us, you know, with all the sauce. And I always appreciate it. So that'll do it here for this week's edition of Believe in Celtics, brought to you by Bet Online. Again, he's a great Gary Washburn. Follow him, man. He's been hustling, ripping and running, continues to do it big. G. Washburn Globe. Again, follow me at Shaw Sports NBA. That'll do it, man. We'll catch you sometime this summer here, a little bit after the draft, going into summer league. And like I said, we'll send you all that picks up, me and Gary in Vegas, yeah, man.
We'll be in the same place, same time, people. Yeah. We will send you a live. We may send you an Instagram live or something.
That's right. We're gonna be grubbing, drinking
somewhere nice. In Vegas, hanging out, getting a good meal, and so you'll see that we're hanging out and together.
That's what's up. We'll catch you next time here. Believe in Celtics, y'all. Peace out.